Podcast. I am your host, Jack Van Horn, and today I have a very special guest, Michael Taylor. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm not too bad.
So, Michael is a composer, an audio designer. He lives in the UK, and he's also a writer for designingsound.org.
That's correct, yeah.
And now your most recent project is called Min Space Journey?
A Space Adventure.
A Space Adventure, that's different. So can you tell me a little bit about Min?
Okay, Min was developed by a new small indie studio called Quirky Studios. I had previously worked with the studio's founder on a game called Tale of the Tree Wisp. That was a finalist in the 2011 Microsoft Imagine Cup. We enjoyed working together, so he approached me with his new idea for a rocket-propelled planet exploring the cosmos and just doing crazy, quirky things. I was really intrigued by this idea, so I signed up and got involved. I helped them work through a number of gameplay ideas. Can't talk about any of those because they may come to fruition in future updates. But we eventually settled on a kind of time attack-style course-based game with little bits of exploration in there. Lots of leaderboards, things like that.
Cool. Now, you recently, a few weeks ago, had an update. So the game is ongoing and constantly being updated. This is an iOS title, right?
Yeah, it's for iPad and iPhone and iPod if you've got a fourth gen. It runs okay on third gen, but not spectacular. So we do recommend the later devices. But yeah, the most recent update added lots of updates for performance and stability, particularly for the legacy devices. But we also added a skin because we launched it on 4th of July, so we added a special skin for the occasion, which I made special sounds for. So rather than the rocket thrust sounds you get normally when you fire the planet, you actually got fireworks and explosions instead.
So Min is actually a UDK title, so it uses Unreal Engine 3. Was this your first experience using the engine?
Yeah, it was my first real project. I had made a test level for my showreel previously, but not a full game. It was pretty difficult. I had to sort of give up the Kismet responsibilities to the programmer. I was basically creating the cues and sending packages over with my sort of recommended volume levels, but they got adjusted in the final game. I got regular gameplay videos to check my work in action, but it was very difficult to gauge things like attenuation and the volume changes based on a video. So in that sense, it was a bit of an uphill struggle to get everything exactly as I wanted.
Yeah, being able to have hands-on, you know, is so much better than having to just throw things over a fence.
Yeah, exactly. And with it being a mobile game as well, we did a lot of prototyping. As I said before, we did a lot of prototyping for the game on PC. When it came to mobile, a lot of those ideas needed to be scaled back. Because after the main thrust sound of the rocket, the main action of the game is that you press the fire button and the planet's rocket ships come to life and they fire you through forward into space. The main sound of that was a sprawling monstrosity. There was nodes everywhere. It was a really complicated beast. And that got scaled back from something like about maybe 20 different unique compartments down to just three. So it was incredibly pared down. And some sounds were even further reduced from that. So
So I remember when you were working on this a few months ago, you were talking about the very odd sample rates. What did you use for like the different assets? How did you optimize like the music sample rates versus sound effects sample rates?
Okay, well, because the game was targeted for mobile, I knew that we had to be quite ruthless with optimization. So even with the aforementioned techniques of consolidating my sounds into smaller, simpler constructions, I still needed to bring that back further. So I used spectral analysis to look at the waveform and see where I could bring the sound to naturally. So if I had a sound file at 44.1 kHz for a UI sound, for example, but the sound itself was 7,000, I could bring that down easily to 14 and not really lose anything. But I would experiment further and bring those as close as I could down before I started to really affect the sound. So there's a lot of experimentation with that.
So let's back up a little bit and talk about how you got started in game audio.
Yeah, cool. Well, I won't start with the whole how I got into sound business, because that's way too long ago, way back. but in terms of how I got into game audio, I was doing a degree in creative music production and technology at the University of Greenwich here in the UK, and I had the chance to do some work experience in my first year. And naturally, I just applied to all the recording studios that I knew of and those that I researched on the internet. But everyone seemed to have quite a good supply of T-boys, so there was no spaces for me. Instead, I was a member of the Lionhead Studios forums at the time, and they were always taking on people to do work experience testing. So I convinced my tutors that if I went there, I'd be able to talk to their sound guys and see what they do, which is partly true, because I did want to go there to talk to them for that, but mostly I wanted to go and play Fable 2 before it came out. So I went and I tested there for a week, and that was a phenomenal experience. I got to see all aspects of development, as well as playing Fable 2, and I met a lot of great people there, one of which was a audio programmer called Neil Wakefield, who was the only person of the audio team left in Lionhead Studios, because they were all on leave because their computers were being worked on. Neil sat down with me and said, okay, sound questions, what have you got? So I asked him all my questions, and he said, yeah, it sounds like you'd be really, really interested in sound design, so why don't you look into that? And since then, it's just sort of been my passion. So all this is his fault.
And so people may remember you from a post you made a year or two ago about porting Oddworld Stranger's Wrath over to FMOD. Can you give it a little bit of backstory into that?
Yeah, I can. I was very lucky with the Oddworld gig. I saw Stranger's announcement, the HD version, and I saw the team was about 70 miles away from where I currently live, so I sent them a speculative email on my CV in the summer and forgot about it, basically, because I'd been sending that many speculative emails at the time. It was just sort of one of millions. But about 3 months later, I got an email back asking about my experience with Exact and FMOD. Exact is the Xbox audio creation tool. It was available for free with the XNA developer pack for the Xbox Indies program. And as I have done work on Xbox Indies, I had quite a bit of experience with this tool. But anyway, so they asked me about my experience with Exact and with FMOD, and asked how, if I'd be able to port the original Exact Xbox One project into FMOD. So they invited me down for a chat in their studio, and I came away with about 7 gigabytes of audio for the Stranger's Wrath project, which included original high-quality recordings of the dialogue and lots of other cool little bits. Part of the task was to take those original 16-bit 44 kilohertz dialogue files and put them into the game instead of the 11 kilohertz 8-bit dialogue files that were in the original. One of the problems with the game that was mentioned in reviews was that the dialogue was quite low quality, and it did show because it was such amazing dialogue that, and the quality was so poor, it was such a shame. So that was one of their priorities to get right. So I went through and replaced as much dialogue as I could find the original four with the high quality stuff. There was also with FMOD and Exact, their music systems work in different ways, so it was a bit more difficult than expected in that respect. If we were to make it work as I wanted it to, it involved tweaking the game engine and adding a lot of new parameters, which the team weren't too happy about doing on the timescales they had to work in. So I had to be sort of a bit quick on my feet and adapt very quickly to FMOD's different systems, and eventually using the FMOD event system rather than the music system to recreate the music structure of the original game.
And you weren't able to recreate it in a one-to-one. You still had to make some concessions given how dynamic the Exact system was, right?
That's right. We basically lost the ability to crossfade in the original game. The patch that came out last month actually does add crossfading back in a very complicated manner. We basically have two instances of the music running at any one time, one slightly delayed from the other, and we crossfade between them. So we're sort of faking the crossfade system a little bit. But that was, as I said, that came out in the recent patch, and that was just due to timing. We didn't have the time to work on that before the game was released, unfortunately. So I'm quite pleased that it's a lot more resembling the original product now than it did when it first came out on PS3 last December.
Yeah, that's the great thing about patches is you do have second chances.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when it first came out, I was mortally embarrassed by it, but now it's I can play it and I don't feel such shame.
So cool. So last week you went to the Develop Conference, right?
I did, yes. Met some fantastic people there, including Carl Fickman from DICE, Gary Taylor from SEE, dozens of others that Drink has sort of made their names flitter away for some reason. That was a fantastic, fantastic day.
Were there any audio talks that you were able to go to?
I went to the entire day of audio talks. I attended a keynote session by Stephen Root from Codemasters. That was just talking about focusing on what you actually want to achieve with audio, you know, rather than focusing on making every object in the world have a sound and make that come alive. You know, what do you really want players to focus on? What do you really want to achieve with the sound? What kind of emotion do you want to bring out with that? And then going to town on achieving that one aim. And then from there, you work backwards and how much more can you add in the time and with the budget you have? And that was a fascinating way of looking at it.
Well, definitely. You want to get the overall shape before you start adding the details. If you add the details too soon, you might lose the overall shape.
Exactly. And I thought that was a really interesting point because, you know, a lot of times it's like, well, these things need sound. In my case, I've been asked for sounds from many different bizarre things. And I think, yeah, that needs a sound, that needs a sound, that needs a sound. And it's like sometimes those things don't necessarily need those sounds. And, you know, you don't need to put all that hard work into something that's not going to be noticed, if you know what I mean.
No, certainly. I mean, it's in a very similar point, I've worked on indie projects where they bring me on really, really early and they want assets right away. And I'm like, well, hold on, guys. You're probably going to cut a lot of these features and there's no point making sounds for all this stuff right now.
Exactly.
It's not even going to matter.
Yeah. There's that. And then there's also just background elements. You know, if you've got an action game and you're firing your weapons, the main sound you're listening for are the screams of your dying enemies, the gun that's going off in your hands, and the explosions that are resulting from those gunshots. You know, so it's like from there, you sort of scale back how much do you need of everything else.
Right, you don't really need to hear the clock ticking on the wall.
Yeah, but then to sort of argue against that, what DICE did with Battlefield and the dynamic range on that, they worked that really well so that you could have those moments where the clock was ticking on the wall and you could hear the footsteps and the breathing of people around you. And that made for really quiet moments that made the loud moments that the gunfights sound amazing and so rich and full of life.
Definitely.
And that brings me on to Gary Taylor's discussion about loudness standards that they're implementing on PlayStation platforms. That was an awesome talk, more details of which will be coming in a forthcoming Design Sound post, I hope.
Cool. So what games have you been playing these days?
Most recently, Lollipop Chainsaw. I absolutely love the soundtrack for that game. I'm a big fan of Akira Yamaoka's work in general with Grasshopper Manufacture. Shadows of Damned was an awesome, awesome sounding game. And Lollipop Chainsaw is just as good in that respect. Really plays up to the visual aesthetic. It really ties in nicely.
Yeah, for our listeners who haven't seen or heard anything about Lollipop Chainsaw, it actually does a very good job of using licensed music in the scene. So I think there are like some battle scenes that use Mickey, Hey Mickey, You're So Fine song.
Yeah, when you use a certain power-up, that Hey Mickey comes on. In the menus, you have the Cornette's Lollipop song playing,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll flick straight through to like death metal for boss battles and stuff like that. And it stops off at some very odd, unique musical points on the way. It is worth playing for the soundtrack alone.
Yeah, I mean, Suda 51 is known. He's one of the main creators at Grasshopper. Is very well known for his pop culture and video game and 80s music references.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. It's very enjoyable. But also, I've just finished Rayman Origins on PlayStation Vita. That game has a phenomenal use of music. It's really well envisioned and well implemented. you know, the musical factors, just they're all over the place, and they add so much to the experience. It's just a very fun game to watch, to and to play, and to listen to.
Yeah, it's a very gorgeous looking game.
Oh, definitely.
So you've been playing anything else?
Other than that, I keep going back to Sonic Generations for some speed runs and to listen to that amazing remix of Speed Highway. I love Sonic music in general. I always have done since I first played it back in 92. But the remixes they did for Sonic Generations are just so special. They're so unique. I absolutely love them.
For our listeners who don't know, Michael is probably the biggest Sonic fan in the entirety of Europe.
Yeah, it is my guilty little secret. Actually, at Develop, I was writing all my notes in my Sonic notebook, with a great big picture of Sonic slapped on the front of it.
Really?
Yeah. I actually felt a bit embarrassed when I got it out the first time. I was like, oh, these guys around me, they're all kind of professionals, and here I am with my bright blue Sonic the Hedgehog notebook. I feel a bit daft.
If it makes you feel any better, I just recently ordered some Super Mario shoelaces as a Club Nintendo reward.
Awesome.
So I'm right there with you. So where can people find you on the interweb?
Well, there's obviously Designing Sound, where I post erratically on game audio topics. I'm also on Twitter at Stomp224. And there's obviously my own website as well, which is www.stomp224.co.uk. I think that's all the places I'm willing to tell you about that I hang out.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for taking this time to talk to us about Min and your experiences in game audio and most recently at Develop.
No problem.
Please follow Michael on Twitter. He's on there all the time. And please read all of his Designing Sound articles, which are